Hi, and welcome to Varga Uncut, the podcast that's all about celebrating the lived experience of women in Singapore and beyond. Imagine getting first dibs on Vogue's latest episodes, behind-the-scenes content, and even some chic surprises along the way. Join Club Vogue on vogue.sg/subscribe to be part of our inner circle.
Hello and welcome to Vogue Uncut. I'm your host, Chandri, Vogue Singapore's Associate Lifestyle Editor. And today I'm joined by two of my favorite content creators to talk all about what it means to be a brown female creative in Singapore. So I'm going to let Preeti and Keela introduce themselves, but I'm just going to say that if TikTok Wrapped existed, these two would dominate my top five. But please, girls, tell us, what do you do, what kind of content do you make, and which platforms can we find you on?
Hi, I'm Preeti Please, Singapore's top everything. So my name is Preeti and I do satire comedy content online. I started off doing parodies, which was just all using comedy to talk about a lot of things that I care about. And I found it to be a really powerful tool. So I just kind of rolled with it. And I also do rap music, everything that somehow has comedy, but still really important to me.
I'm Keela. I'm still fairly new to the whole content creation game, but I started off with doing like comedy skits, and now I'm branching into like beauty, fashion with like some comedy bits and pieces. But yeah, I'm still quite new, so I'm a baby in the industry.
Hi, baby.
Can you both tell us what year you kind of started roughly?
Oh, I think my first ever parody video was like in 2016. Oh. But I only started doing this full time maybe in the next 1 or 2 years after that. Yeah, but the first parody video was like, I remember having a 9-to-5 job and I just saw something that was just really annoying. And I was like, you know what? I need to parody this.
So, I saw that video.
So yeah, it was the Fashion Police parody.
An iconic video from an industry
The trash
veteran.
Bag Orchard Road video.
Yeah. For mine, I think I started during quarantine lockdown. So I think like 2021, 22, around there. Yeah.
She's a baby.
I'm a baby. Yeah.
Okay, so obviously we are here to talk about, you know, race, gender, identity, all of those very fun things. Mm-hmm. And Preeti, maybe we'll start with you just because you've been doing this for mm-hmm. quite a while now. And what is interesting to me is that your content from the very start was focused on brown identity, mm-hmm. minority representation. So why was it important to you back then?
I mean, I think for me, it was the very obvious lack of minority representation that resulted in me just, hey, you know what? I'm gonna parody everything that goes on here. I'm gonna laugh at everything and somehow try and call people into this conversation and start the conversation of, hey, you know, where is the representation in Singapore? How come we are actually, you know, playing up the stereotypes a bit too much, and we need to have actual like brown voices, minority voices at a lot of these like mainstream platforms. So for me, there's always been a lack, and of course, growing up as a brown girl, I'm like, I already grew up seeing this.
Yeah, and you took a kind of tongue-in-cheek, humorous approach to the topic, right? Which ultimately is quite a serious topic. Yeah. So what kind of response did you first start getting?
I think it was a bit shocking for everyone because it was not normal to... parodies were definitely a thing and people were so used to seeing parodies that were funny and stuff. But I think using satire and just going in and just being the most sarcastic, delusional person in the room, that is an approach that I thought was kind of unique, and I just had a lot of fun doing. So the response was really, it was really positive. A lot of people were laughing along with me, and a lot of people in the comments started to tag their friends and talk about the things that I was trying to address with these videos. So it was very, very nice to see that, hey, This works, you know, like this is an approach that I enjoy doing and I really enjoy creating content like that. And to see it work to an extent and see people like start these discussions, even if it was just a funny, silly thing, like tagging their friend and being like, oh my God, you do this all the time. This is you, you know, like doing things like that in the comments was just like, wow, I guess this works. It's starting a very important conversation on the internet.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds fun and silly, but at the end of the day, I think what was interesting is also that you were entering spaces that have been traditionally gatekept. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about fashion influencers in Singapore, I think before you came on the scene, and now we have some amazing brown influencers, obviously, that we love. But before this crop came up, I think there was a very clear imbalance of race and the type of influencers that you saw in the fashion scene, the beauty scene. So I think it's also the fact that you were entering this space confidently and you didn't really care if you fit what people thought a fashion influencer needed to be. Did you get any backlash at that point?
I think naturally, as with any kind of like humor on the internet, especially with parodies, I think people, some level of will take it personally, especially people who are part of the thing that I'm parodying, the piece of content that I'm parodying. So I didn't receive backlash for the first video or anything like that, or any of the first few parodies I did. But I knew, like, just in conversations or like sometimes in the comment section when people were discussing it, some people definitely thought like, okay, but why does she need to be so mean though? Like, okay lah, but the first video wasn't that bad. They kind of took it a little bit a bit too personally. But I'm like, I mean, exactly what you said. I think because I completely did not fit the role or the idea that people had when they hear the term influencer, to me it was, this is so obviously me just being sarcastic and funny. I'm not taking this personally. I had a lot of fun doing that. And I don't remember any significant backlash from the calling myself Singapore's top something and just doing something crazy in Orchard Road or like anywhere in Singapore, which was ultimately all I did at the start of my career.
Yeah. Do you feel like you started seeing race-related comments, whether positive or negative, at a certain point?
I think it's interesting because, I mean, of course, I've been brown my whole life and I will be brown my whole life. So, so for me, it's like, it's because I started existing on the internet so publicly, then it kind of just opened up the doors to strangers giving me unsolicited comments or just talking about my race or telling me why they don't like me. And mostly the reasons behind that were always because of my skin color. Like, I would get really racist comments, or because of my size, because I'm a plus size girl, you know? So it, to me, it was really funny because you to resort to like low blows like that about someone's appearance is just, give me something better, you know? Like, do more. Like,
for
right
me,
now,
yeah.
Like, only when I started existing on the internet, it became really obvious. But of course, growing up brown in Singapore, I always joke about how it's kind of a rite of passage to hear the same kind of jokes through your secondary school life. Somebody will make a joke about how they cannot see you in the dark when I'm like, I am a light-skinned brown girl. You know how ridiculous that is? So I'm like, everyone can see me in the dark. Maybe you should get your eyes checked, you know? So things like that. Like, you hear the same jokes. I speak to so many of my like fellow brown friends, and whether male or female, you know, they experience, it's the same few jokes that we all hear. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? It's the Singaporean rite of passage to be brown in
this country. The joke is so funny because if you turn off the lights, you cannot see anyone.
Yeah, like, you cannot see most things. You know why? Me only.
Yeah, that's how light works. That's how eyesight. Okay, at this point, I think I would also like to ask Kila, yes, you about your experience, because obviously you started making content more seriously a whole 5 to 6 years later after Preeti. Not to make you feel...
It's okay.
Yeah. Like a geriatric content creator.
Wow.
But for you, how different or how similar was your experience specifically when it comes to the race-related commentary that you got?
So, well, when I make content on my channel, like my TikTok page, for example, I never really focused anything about race. It was just me existing and just being funny. But I think it was definitely more so of, that was what people expected from me constantly. They just wanted me to be like this funny person. And it's like, I can be hot as well. You know, I can be like someone who's like a fashion influencer. I could be, you know, doing beauty and stuff like that, like everyone else. I don't always have to be like that funny brown girl or that funny like bigger brown person or whatever, and it really, like, it was brought to my attention always, like, when I went to events. So when I go to events, for example, I would like look around the room, like, where are my brown girlies at? I don't see much, or there's probably just like one or two others, and I'm like the only one there. And granted, I'm still like fair, like light skin, you know. So I feel like I definitely saw that difference when I went to events, and I guess also in the comments section, occasionally there would be, I've seen some comments that are like racist, where they're like, people call me up on it. Yeah. I'm like, okay, or like they'll be like, I bet she smells of curry, this and that. I'm just like, okay, like, I don't know why you bring this up. It's not really funny. It's like, I don't know, like, it's 2024, girls, like, come on. But I mean, I feel like also like what Preeti has said, like it's a rite of passage. I've heard this all before. You know, it's nothing new. Like if you want to like trigger me, you need to come up with something a little bit more exciting. For me, eye-opening was events, event spaces, this and that. Just going to events, seeing that I'm the only brown person there. And like when I look around the room, everyone else is like the majority race. And I'm like, you know, there are so many other brown influencers that I know of that deserve like coming here or just being a part of this experience, but like why aren't they here, you know? So yeah,
I love that we're at a point where as brown women we are just like, yeah, I get tens and dozens of racist comments a day, but my main problem with that is that they're not original. Like yeah. At least make them funny, at least yeah. Make them original.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so lame. Like what's the point, right? You waste how much energy to write yeah. That yeah.
But the fact that they exist is just something that we've accepted. Yeah. It's a fact of life.
It's like a bit sad, but yeah. We need to like find a humor in things, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is true. You made an interesting point about going to events, because now we are talking about a time in which brands and players in the fashion and beauty and lifestyle space, they have started coming into this conversation of diversity and inclusion, even in Singapore. So it's interesting to me that you go to events and you don't see many other brown faces in the room. Is that a conversation that you've ever had with someone from a brand or another influencer, whether they are from a minority race or a majority race?
I've spoken to like companies I've worked with before previously. But I think for one, it's definitely whenever I always feel like I'm like the token brown person. And because I'm like fairer skin, I'm sort of like, yeah, like, easy way to hit that diversity check mark. But with that being said, like I feel like they always have like a quota of brown people they can invite, and then the rest will just be like the majority race. But I've spoken to like, I was with different various agencies before, and I've spoken to them. They just said like, you know, that's just Singapore, you know, we are, I mean, obviously there's a lot of improvements that have been made in the industry already, but honestly, like that is just Singapore, that's the industry itself, you just need to accept it. But it's like, why should I accept something that it's not accepting of my, like the brown people, you know, the community that I was brought up in, you know what I mean? So, I mean, yeah, always, like I always just hear like, it's still evolving, we just need to give it time to evolve, but like how much time are we going to give it, you know what I mean? Yeah.
What does tokenism mean to you in this context?
I think definitely, when I go to like, again, events, for example, I feel like I'm there to always just fulfill a quota or to make themselves look better or to make themselves look like diversified, for example. And it just doesn't feel genuine. And I feel like you can always sense when something doesn't feel genuine. Like when you go to events or like even if I did I've done brand photo shoots, for example, or like photo shoots, whatever. And I can feel like I'm like the token talent or the token influencer, for example, because it doesn't come off genuine. It doesn't feel like they genuinely care about like
your content or you know what you do. Like they don't actually care about what you bring to the table, but rather the box that you're checking for them.
Yes. Yes. You're explaining it a lot better than I do.
No. You explained it beautifully. But I think that must be such a disheartening feeling, because you guys do pour so much time and effort and thought into your content, and then to potentially be in a situation where a brand is treating you like just a box for them to check off the diversity component of their campaign. How do you deal with that? Let's say when you're on a set and you get this kind of sixth sense, your spidey senses starts tingling, like, okay, this is, some racism is happening here. How do you confront that situation? Because I think a lot of times we are also alone in those situations, and we also happen to be the only brown person in the room. And you run the risk of speaking up and then being told that you're crazy and you're imagining this, or you're very difficult, like very hard to work with, crazy brown woman, you know, angry brown woman, all of these things. So I mean, anyone feel free to jump in. How do you personally confront that?
I think for me it's always been finding a balance between being able to stand up for obviously what I feel is right and representation here, and using my privilege and like this seat that I have at the table to what can I do here, right, in this room. And also finding the balance between picking my battles, because at the end of the day, it is a job and it's my livelihood. And time and time again, when I have spoken up in these circumstances, what I see happen is that I just don't get invited to these events. I just don't get invited. I'm dropped from PR lists. I'm dropped from event invite lists. And I'm just like, that's okay because I can survive without attending these things. But is that fair? No. You know, so it's a struggle to balance that because in your mind, you're like, I know exactly what's at stake here when I open my mouth because I've seen this happen before. But, and it's also, you're in a position where you're just constantly gaslit because like you say, you know, you're made to feel crazy and you're like, oh no, you know, like that's not true. That's not like, even though all the signs point to like, hey, I'm the only brown person in this room. Like I,
and you cannot call me. And I'm being treated a certain way.
Yeah. And you cannot call me crazy because I am a token. Let's just be real here. So it's a bit frustrating because I have been in situations where I've like spoken up against things and spoken up and like, hey, I don't think it's fair that there are people on a PR list or an event list that are make so many people in the room feel unsafe. You know, they are really horrible people that use their platforms to like only tear other women down, only tear people down, but then they're there at every beauty event. And it's very, very problematic. So I'm just like, hey, you know, I don't think it makes sense. First of all, as a PR agency, I feel like your job is literally to represent this brand and do what represents the brand best. So why is a random brown girl influencer having to tell you that, hey, I think having someone like that on your list is extremely like a horrible representation of your brand. I think your founder of your brand would agree with me. But like, why am I fighting for that? Why am I suddenly doing your job for you? And I find that I've had so many brands reach out to me or like just people who work with agencies reach out to me to be like, oh, can we get on a quick call? Just want to get your advice on something. And I'm like, yeah, okay, sure. I thought like something that involves me maybe, but it's just a sense check on like,
do you think a racism consultant,
yeah,
basically.
Would you think that if I released jewelry that looked like this, is it appropriation? You know, I've literally been called by friends who are like, I mean, industry friends who are like, you know, founders of like brands. No, I was not. Obviously, it's not.
Girl.
It's an expectation, and I became like somebody that had to speak on the behalf of brown people. And I'm like, no, I speak on behalf of what I think is right or wrong. My voice is not representative of how this entire community feels. That's just facts.
That's how you know that those people don't have a single brown person on their
team. Yeah, and it's so exhausting because I'm like, I'm not even in your team. Exactly. And we're like barely even friends. I'm just somebody in this industry that you know. And it's just, how has it come to a point where you're so comfortable to like pick up a phone and ask me these things? And it's just so exhausting because it's not just from brands and agencies. It's also from fellow influencer friends who want to like start their own company, do their own thing, launch their own merch. And I'm just there like, oh my gosh, I'm your brown friend. So to me, it's like, this is so
awkward.
Brown. I'm literally the only brown human being they know at this point. So yeah, I think for me, when it comes to things like tokenism, I have to pick my battles because realistically, I've done this for a living for so long. And I mean, just in my own personal life, I've had to be sole breadwinner. I've had to take care of things at home. And that's a very, very, very real thing to consider that, hey, you know what? In certain situations, if I'm not selling out and I'm comfortable to be a part of this campaign and do this and I can sleep well at night after being a part of this, I will still proceed to do this. And if there's a better way for me to approach this from behind the scenes to let them know, hey, maybe in the future, you know, like have a open, honest conversation with them, I will always do it if I'm able to. But yeah, it's very tricky. And when it comes to tokenism, I'm just like, when I'm so obviously a token hire, it's come to a point where I tell myself, like, you know what? You want me to fill this quota? I'm going to fill it. I'm going to kill it. I'm just going to come in here and I want to be remembered as the girl who was damn funny in this campaign or the girl who, like, did a damn good job in this campaign. And not as the brown girl they got for that ad.
Can I ask, do you sometimes feel like you always have to, like, up the funniness because of, like, the content that, A, you make and also being, like, you know, like a funny brown creator? Because I get that a lot. Mm. People always expect me to be funny when I want to be serious at times, but I am a serious
person.
And
the thing is, you have serious beauty and fashion content, like your thrifting content, your makeup tutorials.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, whenever brands, like, occasionally, if they want me to, like, do, like, sponsorships, some, like, things like that, they always want me to be funny. Funny all the time. And, like, to the point where it's almost like, okay, like, this is a bit too silly or too cringy, like
suddenly I'm a clown.
It's like they want you to put on my clown
joke. Yes, yes, like
it's a lot.
Yeah, like can I just not be hot? You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah, the one big thing that I've noticed, right? People laugh at everything I say.
Yeah,
I can say something that is I was not trying to be funny, and I genuinely meant that, or that's just how I would have responded to something. And literally, there'll be people just laughing and like, oh my gosh, it's so funny. But I'm like, dude, like I was not trying to be funny there. So it gets to the point where sometimes I've been in so many rooms where I literally, like other people who know me very well in these situations, we would look at each other like, I don't even think that was supposed to be funny. Why are people laughing at everything I say? I think they just know that because it's Pretty Please, everything she says has to be like gold.
Yeah. Yeah. And the point I want to bring up is, are they laughing at you or are they laughing with you? You know?
I think at this point, they don't even know why they're laughing because nothing was funny
like,
here.
I don't know why I'm laughing.
Like, laugh at me all you want because I am the most self-deprecating person in the room and I will laugh at myself first.
Yeah. I want to go back to something that you guys talked about just now. Preeti, you brought up the fact that you have been treated as a free racism consultant by friends and non-friends alike. Mm-hmm. And also the point that you both brought up about, yes, I might be the token hire, but I'm gonna kill it. I'm gonna go the extra mile. I'm gonna make sure that I'm the best performer in the room. And ultimately, what we're looking at is a huge amount of labor on your part that no one else is having to deal with in that room. Like there are, we all know that brown girls have to work twice as hard to get in the same rooms a lot of the time. And I'm curious to know how you feel about that because it almost feels like there is this impossible standard that you have to meet. And okay, what happens if a friend or a brand calls you and it's like, yeah, I need a sense check on this campaign that it might or might not be racist. If you tell them that, hey, no, I'm not going to do this for you for free, like you need to go read up on this and educate yourself, there is a chance that a campaign that is less than favorable to the brown community then goes out there. And then you might actually feel a sense of responsibility. So how do you deal with the fact that we are always expected to do all this extra labor, we're not compensated for it, and then if we don't do it, there might be repercussions?
I mean, I definitely think that is straight up unfair. It is not fair how we have to work doubly as hard to be in the same rooms, to be in the same campaigns even. And I think this is where things like allyship really need to come into play, because I feel like we wouldn't even be in situations where people are calling us for sense checks or like calling us to just get advice on like, is this about to be racist? You know, if you clearly did the work yourself, like, you know, if you made sure yourself, your team, people around you, the people that you work with, we're all educated to a certain extent when it comes to these things, or just we know these things, or we don't have to rely on the brown person to do all the labor in every workplace that we look at. So I think allyship is really important here because someone else needs to be doing the work on our behalf, and we need allies in every community to support every minority community, you know, and race is a big one here in Singapore. And of course, and all these things intersect, you know, being a brown woman, like, are the brown men speaking up for us, you know, like in
oh, for sure.
Exactly. So that to me is like, yeah, we need allies in our own communities. You don't have to not be a member of the community, then you show your allyship. Within the community, I think that there's a lack in that as well.
Yeah. And I feel like people always will be like, oh, well, not everything's about race. But it's like, at a certain degree, it is about race. What? Because you do see the clear discrimination. So at what point are you going to start realizing that it is about race? It's not just like we're just trying to be petty or just trying to like start an argument or something.
Also, like, we live in Singapore. You cannot say things are not about race when our whole country is based on being multiracial, multicultural. We literally cannot buy a home without our race being a part of this conversation.
Or renting an apartment so without race.
Who is making it about race?
You know,
not us.
Yeah. Going to some schools.
Yeah, for
that
sure.
That comes down to your race.
Yeah, yeah. Like my mom, for example, because my mom is a lot darker skin, people used to say that she's my mate. Wow. Yeah, they would like say it to her, they would say it to me. I'm just like, excuse you, she birthed me. Yeah, they would call her my mate, and my mom would just like is used to it by now.
It's honestly so gross because on the opposite end, my dad was really fair skinned and he grew up with like people telling him like, wow, I look like Ang Mo, you know, and I'm like,
same, my dad is also very fair skinned.
Yeah. And I'm like, the fact that it's just the biases, like, you know, you come into that. I'm sure my dad obviously was treated better in any room he walked into rather than
my mom, who
is dark skinned.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there was a big question mark as to how they were even together because of the generation they came from. So it's just very, very like, it's very shitty because you don't know if they are using their privilege in that moment to kind of correct them and be like, don't say that, that's not okay, you know, don't speak that way. And like and it's sad because if you're the person that's like, I don't expect your mom to be able to have to like have to fight for her rights and defend herself and be like, hey, excuse me, that's my daughter. You know, like, why would she want to do all that when she's just like, you know what, let's just move on. You
and
know,
I feel like it's
engage.
Like when you're used to it, right? It's just like,
exactly. Which is so sad. That's why I think it's important for the people who like have the privilege in these moments to say something, to do something.
Why do I feel like this is such an universal experience because my mom is very light skin and my dad is darker skin. Mm. And I mean, if I do say so myself, my mom is stunning. Mm. But I think it's not the fact that she is objectively stunning, but the fact that she is very light skin. Mm. And I have vivid memories as a primary school child, my teachers in school meeting my mom and being like, I cannot believe you're Indian. You're so beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
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 It's ridiculous.
As a 10-year-old, I heard that and I was like, did this woman just...
Yeah. We're supposed to be ugly or what? Is happening?
And
here?
What do you think of me?
Yeah, my name is Preeti. Eh? Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, exactly. Come on. Yeah.
But I find that it's also even things like the way we speak. Like, just because you speak in proper sentences, you speak like just like English in a proper like clear way. People are baffled that you are Singaporean. Yeah. Sometimes I'm like,
and they get pissed off. Eh, some people will be like, why are you speaking like that? Yeah. Are you trying to like be like another
And the thing is, like, there's no Angmoh accent. Like, hello, it's still a Singaporean accent. That's right. Just that you are speaking in complete sentences lah.
Also, yeah, code switching is a thing.
Yes,
you know, sorry, my Indian parents cannot understand my Singlish and I need to develop some enunciation skills.
Yeah.
I want to talk a bit about acceptability politics because I think that's the topic we're on, and I just wanted to do a little caveat and talk about the Black community around the world, specifically the African American community. And I think reading about their experiences and their work and their labor in distilling, explaining these experiences has informed a lot of my anti-racism learning. Mm. And one thing that I always come back to is reading about Black women in the fashion world specifically, because obviously I work in a fashion magazine, editors, designers, even models, talking about how when the fashion world in the West finally started opening up to these Black talents, even though these Black talents had always been influencing artistry and fashion from the very start, it still was very narrow. Like, the parameters in which they had to operate were very narrow. So they still had to be thin. They still had to speak proper English, whatever that means. They needed to have their hair styled a certain way. They couldn't have anything that was inherently Black about them at that point. So I'm curious to know, like, what does that mean for you in the context of Singapore as a brown person? And are there times in your experience as a content creator where you're meeting brands, you're meeting important people in the industry, where you feel like you need to, or you're expected to tamp down on certain extra brown things about you that people might not find so desirable? But they still want a brown person in the room to feel like, okay, yeah, we are very diverse, but I don't want you to be too brown.
I mean, I think for me, I feel like I had that sort of internal struggle, like, especially when I was starting out in the industry, even when I was younger, where I always feel like I had to tone down on my brownness, or I couldn't seem like I'm actually brown. Like, yeah, I'm brown, but I don't seem brown. You know what I mean? Like, I have to, like, kind of act a certain way where it's like, doesn't seem
like almost thriving on being successful despite of your brownness, yeah, rather than because of your brownness.
Yes, yeah. And I don't know, I just feel like I think because of like racism I experienced in school and also like everywhere else, like I always feel like I had to sort of not seem like I'm brown. Does that make sense? Like even the most like minute things, like for example, like me saying like to eat nasi padang.
Yeah. That's true.
I would say like, oh no, like I'm
a Thai fan girly.
I'm a Thai fan girly, you know, like you know, even the simplest things, right? I always feel like I'm like checking myself.
Oh my God, that is so true. I think for me it was quite on the other end because I grew up studying Mandarin in Singapore as a brown girl, right? So it's like growing up doing that is some level of I feel like I'm not brown enough.
Yeah.
And then at home, I'm like, I know how brown I am and my family is. My mom speaks to me in Tamil every day.
And
my mom speaks to me in Tamil every day, even though she didn't even let me study that language, maybe study Mandarin. So I'm like, I somehow picked it up. I can, if I needed it to save my life, I could use it, but I'll probably risk my life more by using it. But you know, it's one of those things where I always grew up feeling like, oh my God, that's so weird. Like all my fellow Indian friends had the experience of leaving the classroom for their mother tongue. And I'm here like
same
with all the Chinese kids, but I'm not Chinese. And I'm so brown. I'm sitting there with a putte on my forehead. Like I'm the most not brown, the most non-Chinese person in this room. And I just feel so like, so awkward because I don't belong here. But I also kind of feel like I don't belong with my fellow brown friends because I don't even study a the whole language, our entire mother tongue that we are supposed to share, I suddenly don't share that. And obviously language is a big thing that brings people together. Right? So it was a bit of a struggle growing up there. And then when I kind of reached my adulthood, I always felt the need to like, I felt a little bit ashamed about the fact that I did not study my own mother tongue. I cannot converse comfortably in Tamil. And my dialect is Malayalam, and that wasn't even obviously something that was ever offered in Singapore. So I'm like, I feel so not brown suddenly because all I know is Mandarin. All I can speak is Mandarin and English.
Do you get shame on internet for not knowing your name?
Yeah, I'm curious to know how this affects you as an actual like content creator.
So I think the first time I always speak Tamil at home, like very, very botched, questionable Tamil, whatever my family understands. And it's just, that's just how we speak it because both my sibling and I did not study Tamil in school. Whatever we know, we pick up from TV, movies, and random colloquial like slang stuff that my mom would say, right? So sometimes we don't know that it's wrong. On paper, these words are like, doesn't exist one. It's just what exists at home, right? So I'm so used to like speaking a certain way or saying, being comfortable at home like that. And one day I was like, actually, you know what? I speak it so often and I think it's really like entertaining at how bad it is that let's just like embrace the fact that I'm not good at this, but I'm trying and I think it's funny and I think I know enough to do a funny video and try and speak in Tamil. So the first ever video I put out on the internet with regards to speaking in Tamil was a Deepavali makeup tutorial back in 2019. And I just sat there, just me and my camera, and I was just literally doing my makeup in Tamil. So
I saw this.
Yeah, so it's like essentially it's horribly translated Tamil. So if I needed to say I'm putting on eyeshadow, I'll say I'm putting color on my eye. You know, like it was just like really badly translated, but it wasn't anything like super hilarious and I think it's just the way that I was struggling and genuinely trying was very entertaining for people. That video hit like a million-ish views on Facebook, the most random thing. And of course, Facebook means it hit Malaysia, it hit India, it hit a lot of places that I generally don't have a lot of viewers from in like my other platforms. So there were so many brown people that's like, I don't know why you think this is funny. You should be ashamed that you cannot speak your own mother tongue. And how dare you make fun of our language? But then like, a good 80% of the comments are like, please do more. This is hilarious. Like, I got recognized in Malaysia one day because of this video. And it's so random because I don't have like a huge percentage of people who view my stuff from Malaysia. But I was just there for some random work thing. And I was on the streets, like literally just walking. And like a bunch of kids were like, oh my God, that's the girl in the makeup video. And then I'm like, that's so insane to not be in Singapore and experience that. And they knew me from this one video and they thought it was so hilarious. And they were a bunch of boys who don't wear makeup. And I just thought like, wow, that's not my demographic.
You're international superstar.
I am across the border. So finding that balance was interesting because I always grew up feeling like I wasn't brown enough, but I also felt very brown with my brown experience at home and my reality and everything. So now I feel like I found that balance and I definitely don't feel that way anymore. But it's the most random things. Like now I have henna on my hands because I'm going to a wedding this weekend. And it's so normal to me. Like I don't think to explain it to like why I have it on, but the few friends that I've bumped into have been like, hey, how come you got henna? Deepavali? You know, that has happened already. And I like, are you kidding me? Like,
you know, are you like, that's so lame. Doing henna. Like, I love henna, but I used to avoid it because, like, I didn't know how people were going to react.
I've had a teacher, once again, primary school. Primary school was very traumatic for me, clearly. A primary school teacher, I had the littlest bit of henna. Like, you know, I'm 10. I don't have a beautiful, elaborate design. And she looks at that and she's like, that looks really dirty.
Oh,
you should take that off before you come to school.
Your mouth is really dirty.
I was like, I can't take it off. I don't know if you know how henna works.
No, they don't. It's so hilarious.
Unless I literally peel my skin.
Yeah, but I find using that to our advantage sometimes is hilarious. Because in secondary school, I got a nose piercing. And then all I say was, oh, religious purposes. But actually, not allowed. You're not allowed to get your face pierced in secondary school. But you know, they don't care about my religion to know what the religious purposes is. So I lied and I had it since I was 15.
Whoa, okay. Whoa,
right?
I love
it's half my life. That's insane.
I want to talk a bit about tone policing because I think it's something that we've all had an experience with, especially if brown advocacy and gender advocacy is something that we care about. And it kind of connects to the conversation we're having about being too brown and tropes of being an angry brown woman and being too outspoken and making everything about race. And I feel like, Preeti, you said something earlier that really hit me, which is that if everything you want to say about brown liberation in Singapore, you gave the script to a majority, like a Chinese person, and let them say it, I think there would be no more racism in Singapore because the message would be received. But when it comes to people from our own community speaking up, it's a different story. So can you share some personal experiences you've had with tone policing on the internet, specifically in the context of your career as a content creator? And also, I think there's a sense of fear. Once again, we've talked about how this is your livelihood. It's not just a simple hobby that you're doing. It's something that pays your bills. So there is a negotiation of how far can I push this before I start losing out on jobs. And there needs to be that middle ground. So yeah, just share with me sort of your personal experiences with this.
Well, I mean, because I mean, I'm still like fairly new to industry. And like when I started my whole content creation, like I said, I don't really talk much about race and stuff. But in recently, I've started just like a few videos of mine, I'll like touch on it a little bit. Like, for example, there's one video I made how like in schools, teachers always want you to shorten your name because they don't want to learn how to pronounce like a brown person's name, for example. And the comments I gotten like fairly all pretty positive. But there was definitely that like thought in my head that like, oh, like our brand's gonna find this too controversial. Like, even though I'm saying like nothing controversial at all, it's just something that like I think a lot of brown people go through. I always have that feeling like, is this gonna like make me lose out on jobs? And I feel like that's always on the back of my mind.
Internal voice.
Yeah, like whenever I'm doing any sort of video where it just seems like I'm saying something that's a little bit more controversial or a little bit more, you know, touching on race or brands or whatever, I always feel like I kind of need to like edit a little bit or
soften
like
it.
Yeah, or like filter a little bit to make it sound prettier or not as harsh when it is what people are going through. That is the harsh truth. But because like, you know, this is sort of like my freelance job, for example, I always worried I'm going to lose out on jobs and brands. And also since I'm like still fairly new to industry, I am like worried like, oh, I get canceled, you know, and then like all my hard work is just going to fall down the drain, even though like I'm still just starting out and everything. So I think there's definitely that fear that I always get, but I'm not sure about you.
I think for me in my own personal life, like it has come to a point where before I post anything, I want to talk about something that's some level of controversial, race related specifically.
Let's not use the word controversial, guys, because honestly, it is controversial, and I get that it is because that's how people respond. But nothing that you guys do is controversial. It's advocacy, and it's important, and it makes people feel seen. So I just want to, you know, put that out there.
But yeah, it's been very tricky because it comes to a point where now I always consult a friend, or I always ask someone else. I always get a second opinion because after getting censored on a national level, it's very, very tricky. And now you are constantly in some level of self-doubt, self-censorship, which I guess is the point, right, of doing something like that, because you want to scare someone into staying in line and not talking about these things that lamos deem controversial, right? So I'm just like, it's been a struggle because since 2019, I've had some level of self-censorship, and it's been many years. It's been 5 whole years, and until today, I'm some level of like, you know what, maybe I shouldn't. Or you know what, I think about this and I really am convinced that this is an important video to make or something I really want to talk about in the most pretty pleased way, but I end up not doing it. And I've been so like struggling with that in my own mind. And it's very sad when I think about it. It makes me so sad. And I've been tone policed on a scale that's like so ridiculous to me. And
like a national scale.
And I think after that, I don't know of anybody who survived something like that and still is in the industry, to be honest. Because a lot of people are just within the influencer scene, content creation scene, every time someone appears in the news for something, it's usually because of the consequences of their own shitty actions. But I think for me, as much as some people would say it's the same, I don't see it that way. I see it as I was tone policed on a national scale. I was literally told that, hey, maybe if you didn't use the vulgarity there, you would have been fine. I'm like, no, I would not have been fine either way because nobody wanted to hear what I had to say. Yeah. Like, the country was not ready to hear that, to hear us call the majority race out like that. They were just not ready. And then they conveniently put it on, oh, if you didn't use vulgarities, you would have been fine because using vulgarities and hurling them at a specific race, you know, is this, you violated this section of the penal code. I'm like, no, nobody was hurling vulgarities at a race. When you say someone F something up, you're saying they made a mistake. That is, the whole world knows that. So it's not saying F any kind of race or like you're not cussing someone out. So to conveniently twist the meaning of something like that, I was heavily told
it's a question of semantics, right? I mean, it's how do you want to read that conversation? How do you want to read what was said? Do you want to do a compassionate reading that's informed by racial trauma and what our community has gone through? Or do you want to do like a very literal and uncharitable reading?
And like the trope of angry brown women, obviously, every single news article after that video, I looked deranged. Every screenshot they used of me, I looked like I literally looked like I was in the midst of screaming at someone. And I mean, it's a screenshot of a video, or you can pause at any point of a music video and it will look ridiculous. But I don't expect them to use beautiful pictures of me. That's not what I'm saying. But it's that narrative that was just like on a state level that was just
deliberately
put out.
Constructed.
I saw myself on the news every night. I saw myself on newspapers and headlines, and I'm just like, are you kidding me? I'm literally just sitting here saying, hey, a whole bunch of y'all effed up right now. That's it. And if anyone watched any of my content, there was so much support on the internet. But obviously the narrative that was put out there was like, oh yeah, you know, nobody agrees with this sentiment. Oh, and then ministers came up to speak about it before people could even watch the video and form their own opinion. So when you see it being spoken about like that, you're just convinced that, oh my gosh, they did something really terrible here. And you're not allowed
we
to
form. We don't even need to have a conversation about it because we already know what to think,
and the
which
people,
is that they did something terrible.
The people in power are already telling you how they feel, and that's all that matters. So of course, when it comes to tone policing, it's come to a point where I find myself doing it before anyone else, like how I make the joke first before anyone else. It's just really, it sucks. And I feel like even until today, I'm trying to get out of that. I'm trying to tell myself that. And it's very sad because I've never publicly like admitted this or said this. And I've just been like, you know what? Just do my own thing. Just whenever I want to make a video, I'll make a video. But just looking at the amount of content I've created in the last 3-4 years alone, it's just a fraction of what I used to do because I've just been so like convinced myself to not do something because I just want to avoid any kind of like comments or avoid anything with regards to like getting in trouble or like having someone like, I don't even think about the brands and the jobs because I can confidently say that the relationships I made after that big incident are more valuable to me than the brands that did drop me and did not want to work with me because of that case. So I obviously am very lucky to say that I still have a lot of clients and brands that want to work with me that completely understand my intentions.
And that is a form of allyship
as well,
right?
Exactly. And to me, I'm like, I value those relationships so much that I'm not about to sit here and harp on like the few gigs that I lost in those few months.
I want to talk about community and how we can all do better as brown women to champion other brown women and bring them into the conversation and uplift them. Because yes, while we look forward to allyship from people outside of the community, there's also a responsibility that we all carry. And I know that's something that both of you feel quite passionately about. So maybe Keela, if you want to start us off.
For me, it's super simple, but usually like, if I get invited to events, if I can get to bring a plus one, I always make it a point to bring like a brown influencer that I know or like a brown friend that it's in the game, but is still not getting that recognition that they deserve. So I always feel like I always make it a point to bring someone who's brown. Whenever I get a plus one, or whenever I get to like, you know, shout someone out on my TikTok, on my Instagram, or even like specifically working with brown owned brands, for example, businesses, or just reposting or, you know, sharing like some of my other friends, what they've done and everything. I feel like it's the small things that really make a difference in my opinion personally, because, you know, I am a small content creator, but I feel like a little bit goes a long way, and it's just to keep pushing the narrative that, you know, look at us, like, we are equally as talented as everyone else and we deserve to take up space as well. So I think just that small little action, I feel like for me personally, I feel like that makes a big difference. And I've seen it as well. Like, I feel like whenever I start to push for more of my brown friends to be in the public space, I've realized like they've also been getting more exposure in the industry and getting invited to more events and all that. So, yeah.
Yeah, you say it's small, but it's not. It's leaving the door open behind you. And yeah, I think it's so important.
Because I always feel like I'm, you know, I always don't know how to navigate this space, you know, because I sometimes always feel like a bit of a fraud sometimes because, you know, being lighter skin and obviously colorism in the brown community itself, I always feel like I'm so happy to be able to represent, you know, my brown sisters and my family and all. But at the same time, I also understand that I have a certain level of privilege because I am fair skinned, and that brands usually would pick someone like a fair skinned brown person to sort of get that brown check mark, but without actually committing to it, if that makes sense. And like, as much as I really appreciate being given the platform and the exposure to represent the brown community, I also feel like we need to, you know, we need to have more people in it, you know, like not just
a diversity of brown people.
Yeah. Sorry, my words are not coming out right, but you get what I mean. So yeah.
That's great. Thank you. Preeti, on your end, what are your thoughts about building a brown sisterhood in Singapore?
I definitely think there's some level of still looking at each other as competition. And I really wish that it can be healthy competition.
And that's so, what tokenism does, yeah, right? Because it creates just one little neat space for one brown person.
Exactly. So, and any campaign you look at, even until today, you will still see the CMIO quota being hit. You will still see the, or maybe there'll be three majority raised content creators and then there'll be that one brown person. So it's, come on, man. Like be subtle, guys. It's way too obvious, you know? So I feel like naturally that has led to some level of a competition, I feel, between brown women in Singapore, just within the beauty scene, fashion scene, content creation scene. And I just feel like if we can all come together and like call each other in, you know, like invite your fellow brown creator to events if you can, if you have that space to do so. And yeah, supporting each other's content, you know, just even a simple share or commenting publicly, like doing things like that to engage and let your fellow brown people within the community know that they are seen and they are supported. I think that is very important. And yeah, I think that to me is still something that definitely lacks. But I also see like the new wave of like creators, especially obviously the TikTok creators that are like, I see them at events now, I see them at everything. I see them all over my For You page. And I'm like, it's so nice to like see them doing things differently. It's so nice to see them within my, like when I started content creation and when I was at beauty events, it was always me and Sahar. And I mean, Sahar is also on another episode of this podcast. So y'all know Sahar. So yeah, it was always me and Sahar. And we would always talk about how, are you going to be at this event? Are you going to be there? Because if you're not, I don't want to go. You know, if you're not, I'm not going to be comfy. I don't have a friend. And you're also the only other brown person in any of these rooms and spaces that I just feel very out of place. Or I would just go there for a couple of minutes, do what I need to do, and I'll leave. I won't actually be there intentionally to enjoy myself, experience the event.
Yeah. You brought up the younger generation of TikTok creators, and I completely agree. I mean, TikTok creators do not care about anyone's feelings. Yeah. They do not play by the rules and they will call anyone out. Mm-hmm. And I've seen this younger generation of TikTok creators of all races, majority race, minority race, calling brands out for racism, mm-hmm. and really doing the work to build a better community and content creation space. So that's really heartening to see.
Yeah. And it's really helpful when you have that support, because when you're calling people out or calling this kind of behavior out, you always, some level of feel alone in this and you feel like, I just have to pay the price for speaking up, which is very, very exhausting. So I think publicly calling out on a platform like TikTok and having so many like followers just agree and like appreciate this, hey, you know, you make a good point here, and having that support publicly just shows the brand that, hey, you cannot afford to drop them now. If you do, it's just even worse for you. So these things are not happening behind the scenes anymore, which is very important, because now brands, they don't hold that kind of power over you.
Exactly. The power imbalance is shifting. Mm. That's really good to see.
Can I just add something?
Of course.
I just want to say, like, honestly, I'm so thankful, like, for her, because I feel like she's really paved the way. Like, honestly, when she first showed up on the internet, right, I was one, surprised, and two, just like really happy. Like, I think all of my sisters as well, like I have three older sisters, we're all so happy because we have never actually seen a brown female creative influencer who's just existing.
And being fearless being funny and cool.
Yeah. And I was like, I honestly like really like, it was the first time I've ever seen like a brown influencer who like looked like me or looked like my sisters and like, you know, was just being herself, honestly. And I was just appreciative. Thank you. Honestly,
so sweet.
She really paved the way, and yeah. So
it's really scary because I have a friend who is like 5 years older than me, who when I first started out, she explicitly told me, "I wish I had a pretty please growing up." And
yes.
when she said that to me, I like got goosebumps because I wish I had a pretty please growing up, which is so weird to say,
yeah.
but I didn't. And it's so nice to be that person because I'm just like, all I did was just exist. And you're right, all I did was just exist. I did not go out of my way to be like, hey, you know what? I want everyone to like watch me and know that they can do this too. It never started that way, but obviously it became some level of now I'm aware that this is happening. And I always like, intentionally create content for that community that feels that way now. But yeah, I get it. Like growing up and not having that is just weird. And then now I'm like, I wish I had a me growing up, which is such a weird yeah. thing to say.
On that note, we all wish we had a pretty please growing up, but thankfully some of us did. Mm-hmm. And hopefully the generations that come after us will continue to have a bunch of different pretty pleases growing up.
yeah. Pretty pleases.
Apart from just the main motherload. Pretty please. I think we've come to the end of our time, and I just want to thank both of you for being here today. It's been such an amazing conversation. Felt angry, happy, I laughed, I almost cried, you know, I went through all the emotions. And I think this conversation hopefully is also a start of building a community of brown creatives and female brown creatives in Singapore and having these safe spaces to have these conversations. So thanks for being part of this.
Thank
and,
you. Yeah, thanks yeah. for having us.
Signing off.
Subscribe to Vogue Singapore to keep up with Vogue Uncut and the latest news from our editors reporting daily on the latest fashion, beauty and culture. More information available at your fingertips at vogue.sg/subscribe.